the shame for me he bore as he stood alone, forsaken on that day. And they placed upon his head piercing thorns of blood-stained red, the man who wore the scarlet purple robe. In the common judgment hall, he was mocked and scorned by all, and tears of sorrow fell upon his cheek. Soldiers of the wicked men smote him with their evil hand, the man who wore the scarlet purple robe. Purple robe my Savior wore, oh, the shame for me he bore as he stood alone, forsaken on that day. And they placed upon his head piercing thorns of blood-stained red, the man who wore the scarlet purple robe. Words of truth that day was plain, from the lips out it came. In this man I find no reason he should die. But the multitudes then cried, let him now be crucified, the man who wore the scarlet purple robe. Purple robe my Savior wore, oh, the shame for me he bore as he stood alone, forsaken on that day. And they placed upon his head piercing thorns of blood-stained red, the man who wore the scarlet purple robe.
Thank you, James King. That was some beautiful singing.
Thank you there, David. You're welcome.
Folks, we've had a great show here today and a lot of guests. Our good buddy Scott Brannon. Thank you, Scott.
Thank you, David.
Owen Saunders, Marty Hayes, all the Warrior River boys. It's been a pleasure being with you, and we hope to see you again real, real soon. Thank you, Ray Davis. Thank you, folks. See you later.
RCT in sound from way out.
I have an update today to start with about an investigation that many of you have been asking about, going all the way back to at least March of 2021, although maybe further. I remember certainly talking about it in March of 2021. We've known that Republican Congressman Matt Gaetz has been under investigation for a number of different possible crimes, including sex trafficking of underage girls. And he lawyered up with some of the best sex crime defense attorneys in the country, quite frankly. We've been expecting crimes to be charged at some point, and then nothing has happened. And many of you have written to me and said, David, what's going on? Now, of course, I know nothing other than what is reported, but we have a new report from the middle of this week that Matt Gaetz's ex-girlfriend has testified to a grand jury in the sex trafficking probe, suggesting that by all measures, we are getting closer to actual charges against Matt Gaetz. No guarantee, but listen to this report from NBC. Congressman Matt Gaetz's ex-girlfriend testified Wednesday before a federal grand jury investigating him for sex crimes, a major development that suggests the DOJ may be moving closer to indicting him. The ex-girlfriend, whose name is being withheld to respect her privacy, has been in talks for months with prosecutors about an immunity deal. Can you imagine? His ex-girlfriend may be liable for criminality and wants immunity. Under a possible deal, she would avoid prosecution for obstruction of justice in return for testifying in the investigation into whether Gaetz in 2017 had sex with a 17-year-old female for money and whether months later he and others violated a federal law prohibiting people from transporting others across state lines to engage in prostitution. Legal sources familiar with the case say Gaetz is being investigated for three distinct crimes: sex trafficking the 17-year-old, violating the Mann Act, which prohibits taking women across state lines for prostitution, and obstructing police, obstructing justice. Importantly, Gaetz has not been charged with a crime. Gaetz has denied all accusations, saying he never paid for sex. He never had sex with a minor when he was an adult. He has called the investigation a witch hunt. The attorney for Gaetz's ex-girlfriend, Tim Jansen, declined to comment about the case when he was spotted by a reporter entering a courthouse in Orlando with the client. A Department of Justice spokesman declined comment. Gaetz did not respond to a request for comment. The investigation has lasted more than a year. It started when a former friend and ally of Gaetz, tax collector Joel Greenberg, was charged with a host of crimes, from falsely smearing a political rival as being a pedophile or pedophile, to cheating taxpayers in a cryptocurrency scheme, to sex trafficking the same 17-year-old girl in Gaetz's investigation. Greenberg has agreed to plead guilty and is cooperating with federal investigators. An important aspect of the article here is the serious nature of all of the things Matt Gaetz is being investigated for. Now, we don't know what's going to happen here. This might lead to nothing. It's clearly not over. And it is Matt Gaetz's own ex-girlfriend who ultimately might provide the testimony or might provide part of the testimony. We just don't know yet. That leads to very serious charges against Matt Gaetz. Now, what about removing Matt Gaetz from the House of Representatives if he is charged? You can find a number of different commentaries on this. It is typical that if members of the House are charged with felonies, that they resign. They could be forced out. Although whether the Republican Party would be interested in doing that, particularly if they take over the House of Representatives before charges are brought, if they are, there's a lot of questions here, but very, very serious charges. It's not over. Will he eventually be charged? We just don't know, but we could be just weeks away. And I know we've been saying that for a while. We could be weeks away from finding out the answer to that question. This weekend, Donald Trump is going to be speaking at a rally in Arizona. I will be covering that rally. One of the people that is reportedly speaking alongside Donald Trump at that rally is none other than MyPillow founder Mike Lindell, known to us as Mike Pillow. Lindell says he's going to be one of the opening acts at Donald Trump's January 15th rally in Arizona and expects 60,000 people to show up. Why do I mention that? Well, someone who is going to be appearing alongside the former president of the United States is now claiming that he has evidence to imprison 300 million Americans for their actions related to the 2020 election. Now, you might say, wait, David, sir, there are only 258 million adults in the U.S. as of 2020. And of the 258 million, not all of them, not nearly all of them actually voted. Doesn't matter. Pillow says he has evidence to imprison 300 some million people. Take a listen to what he had to say. This is the stuff of insanity.
Everything you're going to see over these next 7 months
right.
to get rid of the machines, you're going to see the Supreme Court case coming out, all these great things, everybody. By the way, you can find more at frankspeech.com.
Of course.
I'll put that little out, put that out there. There are so many. I'm more optimistic today than I have been yesterday, the day before that. I'm on an incline like this. Why? Because it's so amazing. All the things that we have, we already have all the pieces of the puzzle. And you talk about evidence. We had enough evidence to put everybody in prison for life, 300 and some million people. We had that all the way back to November, December.
He has the evidence to put 300 and some million people in prison for life. Now, before we get back to that, if you're wondering about that scratchy, weird voice that he has, I will mention that our friend Zachary Petrizzo from The Daily Beast reported about that yesterday and says MyPillow CEO Mike Lindell has come down with a severe case of, quote, laryngitis. And he added in a comment to The Daily Beast, I can't get COVID, while citing his consumption of an unproven COVID-19 drug. He probably has COVID, is my understanding of that. But more importantly, evidence to imprison 300 something million Americans for life. So if there's only 258 million adults as of 2020, he's talking about imprisoning every adult who voted, every adult who didn't vote, and then 42 million children. So things going very, very wrong for Mike Lindell in all senses of the word, likely has COVID. And again, claims he will be speaking at the Trump rally this weekend. Now, I will be covering the Trump rally, and many of you have written in saying, David, please cover the Trump rally. Others have said, David, don't cover the Trump rally. I'm going to cover the Trump rally. It is fascinating. You know, I just cover what is interesting, and I am fascinated to see, does the topic of vaccines come up at the rally, and does Trump get booed? Trump has been pushing the vaccines pretty hard, saying, of course, everybody needs freedom, but pretty significantly pushing the vaccines. Is he going to get booed in Arizona for promoting the vaccines? Is Trump going to make an announcement about 2024? Is Trump going to make any announcements about support for candidates in 2022? Is Mike Lindell really allowed to go and speak alongside the former president, given that he almost certainly has COVID right now, and also is completely out of his mind, and it's humiliating that he's even allowed near the president? I mean, it's all completely crazy. So I will be covering the rally. If it's not interesting to you, just don't watch it. That's my recommendation. But I will be live on YouTube, Twitch, and Facebook starting at 8 p.m. Eastern Saturday. Trump expected to speak at 9 p.m., meaning he will likely speak between 10 p.m. and midnight. I don't know. He's always insanely late to his speaking engagement. So that's going to be this weekend. In the meantime, we have no idea what sort of evidence Mike Pillow claims to have, but I would guess that you and I would not find it particularly compelling. Make sure you're following me on Twitter at DPacman. Remember that we are still banned from Facebook monetization. We're like 5 days into our 90-day ban for what Facebook's algorithm misidentified as anti-vaccine content from us. Laughable claim. You all know that we are pro-vaccine because that's what the science points to. And we were reporting on anti-vax Alex Jones and we have been banned from Facebook monetization for 90 days. You can support us in that in fighting that endeavor by signing up at joinpacman.com and using the coupon code FFacebook. That's Facebook with two Fs, FFacebook. You tell me what it means. We'll take a break. We have a fantastic program for you today. Glad you're with us. Welcome back to the show. Remember that we are primarily funded by viewers and listeners like you through the David Pakman Show membership program. You can sign up at joinpakman.com. We are going to hear from some people in the audience. You can call in via Discord, davidpakman.com/Discord. And we're going to start today with Clark from Portland, Oregon. Clark, you're on the air.
Hi, David. I was just wondering about what your stance was on lowering the voting age. Obviously, you know, teenagers pay taxes. Many teenagers can be emancipated from their parents. And I was wondering what your stance was on that. And also if you thought that ever be pushed through Congress.
I think there is not a desire to have people be able to vote at age 16 or 17, which generally when people say lower the voting age, they mean 16 or 17. Is that what you have in mind?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that there is a case to be made for that. I think it is widely seen as being better for the left than the right, with the assumption that those 16 and 17 year olds are more likely to vote for Democrats than Republicans. I don't know if that's actually true. I think that that's something that I would want to find data on. I am open to it. I think 17 more than 16 in theory. The truth is, you know, the brain is not really fully formed at that point in time. We know more and more about that. It's part of the reason why we're seeing some places push smoking, you know, the age to buy cigarettes, looking at 21 instead of 18. I'm not necessarily looking to lower ages for things, certainly not for driving. And in fact, as someone who got my license when I was 16 and a half, and thinking back at my friend's driving, it doesn't seem crazy to raise the age to get your driver's license to 17 or 18. But I don't think that there's much of an appetite among lawmakers to lower the voting age.
Yeah, certainly. It's just it's tough to see, especially with all these crazy Trumpists that are probably a lot less educated than some 16-year-olds in my circle.
Yeah.
And seeing like, oh, like these guys probably can make a much better, more informed voting decision than a lot of people out there.
There's no doubt that anecdotally there are lots of 17-year-olds that would be much more educated as voters than many adults that vote regularly. That's without a doubt.
Well, great. Thanks, David. I'm glad to hear your opinion on that.
Pleasure. Thank you so much for the call. There is a Clark asking about lowering the voting age. Let's go next to Dylan from Massachusetts. Dylan, you're on the air.
Hi, David. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, perfect. I'm in my car. Let me know if there's any background noise.
You know there is, but we're going to try to get to the question.
Okay. So what if we were to see some sort of national health care try to be implemented, what sort of model would you personally want to see it modeled after?
Oh, that's really tough. I mean, here's the thing. There's so many models that work. You have to start with your priorities and then work backwards. So universal access for me is a must. Affordability for me is a must. And when you prioritize those two, it's conceivable that quality may not be as high as you want. But obviously, we want all three of these things. And it's kind of like a push-pull, with which Uwe Reinhardt wrote about in his most recent book before he passed away. So I think there is a lot to look at in the German system that's interesting. I think the Nordic model is interesting. You know, when people just say Medicare for all and forget about it, there's no debate to be had. I don't necessarily agree with that. I don't think Medicare for all is a panacea. And I think a lot of people who say Medicare for all, they actually mean a number of different configurations that could be possible. But I have a long clip on this, which looks at, I mean, there's no one answer for me is the point. And one key issue as well is my answer, if we were to have one federal system, might be different than if we say this would be done at the state level.
Yeah, I mean, my personal opinion would be look at Canada or look at Germany. for like a centralized versus a decentralized system. But
yes.
Yeah, good thoughts.
I think that depending on a number of different factors specific to each country, there are merits to all of these different systems, all of which are better than the one we have in the United States.
Interesting. Yeah. How do you think people would react to the government taking a more intrusive interest in public health?
I think we know the answer to that. Part of the country would welcome it, and part of the country would say that it's fascism.
Do you remember when Bill de Blasio tried to ban certain, like, I think it was 1 gallon or 1 liter jugs of soda from being sold in, like, convenience stores?
Wasn't that Bloomberg? Like, I don't remember de Blasio doing it. I remember Bloomberg doing it.
Maybe it might have been Bloomberg. I just remember it was interesting to me because I thought, of all places, New York City would be okay with these sorts of things, and it just did not go well at all.
Well, one of the things about that is you're kind of hurting, sadly, you're hurting the poorer people, because typically, you know, when you buy juice and soda, whatever, in larger quantity, you're paying less per ounce. So when you say no more 64 ounces, only 32s, usually buying 2 32s is more expensive. So there was a real argument to be made that it was disproportionately hurting poor people, which is literally true.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. I see any sort of like efforts by the government to make the public healthier is just not going super well in the United States. But
you know, people like Cass Sunstein say people should be nudged rather than forced into making those decisions. And there's a lot of behavioral economics behind it, which many on the left write off as centrist nonsense. But I think there's a fair amount to be taken from it. These are really, really important topics which have a lot behind them. And I appreciate you calling in about it.
Thank you for taking the question, David.
My pleasure. There is Dylan from Massachusetts. An important call on a number of important issues. Let's go next to SD. From Dallas, Texas. SD, you're on the air.
Hi, David. Thanks for taking my call again.
Pleasure.
So about a couple months ago, I forget exactly when it was, I called in basically talking about how horrible the gerrymandering was going to be, that all of these like red states were going to break up the cities and whatnot. And to my surprise, it actually hasn't been going as poorly as I've suspected. Like, many have looked at this, like, I think including, I forget his name, but the guy from the Washington Post, he said it was basically a wash at this point. So my question is, that being said, would you consider, like, you know, doomerism, taking for granted that the Democrats are going to lose the House and the Senate, or concern trolling, would you consider that a soft form of voter suppression?
Let me see if I understand. You're saying to go around saying Democrats are going to lose, it's a form of suppressing the vote, because if you convince Democrats they're going to lose, they won't even bother voting.
Yeah, that's part of it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, this, we've looked at this on both sides. There was a time where it was like, you know, Trump and others saying they're going to rig it, don't even bother. And then they would kind of go back and forth and they go, no, you should vote. And that those special Senate elections. I think that it's unclear to me that when people are told that they're going to lose, that they actually don't vote. I think it's just an empirical question, and I haven't seen it studied. If people wrongly believe their side is likely to lose, are they actually less likely to vote, or do they become more likely to vote? I don't know the answer. It's something we could study and probably get an answer to.
Yeah, like we study so much the forms of hard voter suppression,
yeah.
Like when it comes to strict voter ID, and it seems like even that it's really indeterminate, like whether or not that actually has as big an effect as many of us would say it does.
Yeah.
But then again, it seems like the larger interest, the larger factors, like people's motivation to like actually go out and vote, which is why I'm kind of concerned with, I don't know why I called it soft voter suppression.
Well, the other thing is, even in saying we're going to lose, it's like you could be saying we're going to lose, don't even bother voting. And you could be saying we're going to lose unless we all go out and vote. And those are two very different things.
Yeah, I agree. Well, I'm just kind of sensitive to like how it's said over that night. Well, thank you for taking my call, David.
My pleasure. My pleasure. A good topic, and glad to have the opportunity to talk about it. Let's go next to Mark from Los Angeles. Mark, you're on the air.
Hello. Can you hear
Hello.
Me?
Yes, I can.
Oh, awesome. I can't believe I'm on the show again. Yay. I asked before, I called before about Stacey Abrams and the whole thing that happened in, I think it was Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think? First of all, I have like a couple, maybe two or three questions, but whatever I can get in. What do you think is going to happen with, you know, Biden's like talking tough, like he really wants to reform the filibuster and actually get us, get the voting rights bill passed. Do you think that's going to actually happen, though, or is this more talk like a reconciliation bill?
Oh, you know what? I want to be optimistic about that. I have a really hard time believing it's going to happen, because reforming the filibuster, you need all 50 senators. And Joe Manchin doesn't seem like he's going to go for it, and neither does Kyrsten Sinema. So it's feeling like it's just talk. I don't know. I want to be proven wrong, but.
Yeah, but Joe Manchin kind of said, like, oh, he'd be open to making it a talking filibuster. But do you think he's just, you know, pardon my language, but you think he's just bullshitting?
The
with the reconciliation bill.
The most recent thing I saw from Manchin is he said he'd be open to making some mutual changes to the filibuster, which sounds like he's saying mutual with Republicans. I don't really know. I'm just not sure. But listen, if it's just an even money bet, do they change the filibuster? I feel like they don't.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm feeling. Yeah, I'm just after the reconciliation bill, I'm just prepping myself for disappointment.
Yeah.
Anyway, also, I wanted to know, why do you think people I work for a union.
OK.
And like literally like almost 50% of my members are conservative, even though Republicans and conservatives were the ones who put forward right to work laws.
Mm-hmm.
And remember when Mitch McConnell, when they were talking about reforming the filibuster, and Mitch McConnell made this threat, and he threatened to do two things. One of them was, what was the other one? Oh yeah. National voter ID, which is actually in the voting rights bill. Now it's just, it's more a looser version of voter ID, where you don't have to get some ID that you have to have a bunch of paperwork and money to get.
Yes.
And he made national right to work law. So that's literally him saying a dream, you know, idea for Republicans. And yet, you know, like there are tons of union members who vote for him. I don't get it.
It's it is bizarre. And there's this weird thing about unions where it's not weird, but it's a notable thing. For a very long time, unions represented a mostly Democratic voting group. They weren't like progressives in the modern sense, but they were just kind of like middle class, center left Democrats. And now there's been a big move away from unions ideologically. And there's a lot of people who are vocally against the idea of unions, but they're still part of a union. Now, some of them would say, I have to be in the job I'm in. I'd rather not pay the dues. But you have this weird situation where you have Republican union members who love candidates that are against everything unions stand for, but they're still in the union. And some would say, I have no choice. But there's definitely a little bit of an inconsistency there.
Yeah, but it's ridiculous, because I'm a stagehand in our union. We make way more money than the people who are not union represented. I mean, there are union members, stagehands with full time jobs who are making six figures and more.
Mm-hmm.
So they are crazy. I mean, so yeah, there's that. Let's see, what else do I have to say?
Well, listen, since we have so many people waiting, let's keep it to those two questions. I think those were good. Let's go out on top. You know what I mean?
Okay, let's go on a positive note. Okay, well, I love you, David. I subscribe. I constantly watch you, and I finally got to call in again.
Mark, so, thank you so much. Great to hear from you.
Have a great one.
All
Bye.
Right, very good. Okay, wow. Let's go next to Eduardo from Brooklyn, New York.
Hi, David. How are you?
I'm doing well.
Thanks for taking my call. I, you know, obviously watching everything that's going on, I have like a more sort of wide macro vision of things that are going on. And a question I have for you is there any sort of entity or anybody that's kind of taking task of like all these Rubicons that we keep crossing that we're not going to be able to come back from.
Give me some, what examples are you referring to?
I mean, just the, you know, best example coming top of my head is, you know, the idea of like claiming anything that doesn't agree with you as fake news and things like that. I think that's a Rubicon that got crossed.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. That's become, I mean, I think there's a couple. One is the acceptable treatment of any media you don't like in this completely hostile way that Trump started with Jim Acosta and CNN, calling any news that's critical fake news, questioning the results of any election when you don't like the results. You say that the election was rigged. That's sort of a Rubicon that I feel has been crossed. Yeah, to your question, I don't see the Republican Party backing off of those tactics anytime soon. I think they're here to stay.
Right. But, you know, my question really is, like, are we keeping track of those so that, like, maybe if we, I don't know, say cross three Rubicons, you know, like one will get through because we didn't, you know, there's so many going on at the same time.
I mean, listen, we're trying to. And I think, you know, one of the good things that happened last week on the anniversary of January 6th was a whole bunch of people wrote articles saying the insurrection and coup, it's not really over. They're going to keep trying it. Jimmy Carter wrote a piece and, you know, a bunch of people wrote. Noam Chomsky was interviewed about it. So I think there's an effort being made to keep track, but it is really tough.
No, I appreciate, like, you know, people like yourself, you know, Farron, Dollimore, those guys, you know, like they, you know, they keep people to task. I just worry that, like, it just, you know, it's a part of like more of an echo box, like echo box than, you know, but David, you know, keep on doing what you do. And I appreciate all your effort.
Thank you so much. And I appreciate you calling in. We're going to take some more calls, but we'll first take a very short break. If you're holding on to talk to me, and you still want to talk to me, don't hang up. We're going to be right back. Let's go to Dean from Dallas, Texas. Dean, you're on the air. Save us, please, Dean.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Hi, first-time caller, long-time listener. I wanted to ask, do you think with the ongoing pandemic having a massive impact, mostly on the elderly when it comes to fatalities, that there will be a significant extension to Social Security, seeing as how, you know, more and more people are buying in and, you know, they won't be able to cash out.
I'm not sure I know what you're talking about. Will Social Security be extended? What do you mean?
Yeah, like the estimations for when Social Security runs out of money.
Oh, I see. Oh, so are you saying, is the money going to last longer, or are people going to have to wait longer before they can start getting Social Security?
Right. Is the money going to last longer for, you know, because, you know, it's projected that people like me on the younger side won't be able to even collect because it'll long run out of money by then.
Listen, those predictions are heavily disputed. So I wouldn't even necessarily start with that as the expectation of where we are. That there are many serious analyses done of the Social Security Trust Fund, which say it's not going to run out. There may need to be a period during which people pay in a little more, or during which they might get out a little less or have to wait an extra year or something. But the it's going to all run out hypotheses, my understanding is, have been pretty widely debunked. In terms of the effect of COVID on that, I don't know the answer to that. It's a very good question. But I think it's something that it's got to be studied by experts in that field. And I don't know that we're going to have all the data until we're really out of the pandemic.
Right. Well, thanks for taking my call. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. Appreciate the call. Yeah, that's a really interesting question. I wish I had an answer. I wish I had an answer, but I don't. Let's go next to Jack from Indianapolis, Indiana. Jack, you are on the air.
Hey, David, how are you?
I'm doing well.
Yeah, so I've just kind of been looking at the way things have been going in America right now.
Yeah.
And, you know, the thing about it is that it can get kind of depressing. And I think, like, you know, why do I follow this stuff so much if, you know, all I can do is vote? I mean, you know, aside from that, I also do some music that is about these issues like police brutality and government corruption and stuff like that. But I was curious as to if you had any recommendations as far as, like, I think they call it civic engagement.
You're saying what, like, can you do other than voting? Is that more or less what you're saying?
Basically, yeah.
There are so many things. I mean, listen, first of all, with technology the way it is now, you can participate in essentially any race you want to by phone banking and fundraising remotely if that's what you're interested in doing. That's number one. Number two, really important to understand that you don't have to attach your activism to individuals. You might attach your activism, excuse me, to issues. There might be, you know, regardless of who your senator is, at the local level where you live, you could figure out, oh, you know what? There's a conservation commission in my city or town. I'm going to get involved in that. Or if you care about literacy, most libraries and library systems have ways for you to get involved. I think the first thing is we've got to kind of disabuse ourselves of this notion that there aren't that many different ways that we can get involved. There's community radio and community television where you can get involved essentially at no cost, depending on where you live in most parts of the country. There's really so much. And so the first, it's almost like there's too much and you've got to figure out, do I want to work locally or at the state level? Do I want to work by helping a candidate or do I want to work on an issue? What do I care about most? Education, the environment, et cetera. There really is no shortage of ways to get involved.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. What exactly is phone banking?
Phone banking is very simple. There's systems where, let's say, let's say it's John Fetterman versus Mehmet Oz in the Pennsylvania Senate race. And it's a few months from now, right? It's the 2022 election. Even if you don't live in Pennsylvania, you can sign up to phone bank. And basically, you can sit at your computer and it'll pop up and it'll say, OK, here is a believed Democratic voter. Call them, ask them if they're planning to vote. It's basically all done through software at this point. And no matter where you are, you can start making phone calls for any candidate you want. Most candidates, assuming that they're set up with these phone banking systems.
Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah. Really easy.
I think that's about it. Thanks for, having me on.
My pleasure. Appreciate it. Yeah. Engagement. So many ways to get involved. There's really no shortage, no shortage. It's almost an embarrassment of riches, quite frankly. Let's go next to, I believe, is it pronounced Vedant from, is it Winnipeg? I'm not even sure.
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
How are you doing, Mr. Pacman?
I'm doing well.
Yeah. So Winnipeg, we're just in Manitoba, Canada.
Love it.
Yeah. So my question was about, how do you choose what to cover? Because I'll preface this with, I listen to a lot of like the new media landscape, a lot of Breaking Points with Crystal and Sagar, Kyle Kalinske, TYT, stuff like that, as well as yourself. And I find that, like, for example, TYT will focus a lot on, like, donations from big, like, companies into politicians and how that runs the political landscape.
Uh-huh.
I've noticed, like, you tend to focus a little more on, like, January 6th, stuff like that. And I was wondering, what makes you find that that's the most important thing that you want to cover?
It's not. This is a beautiful question. Vedant, how old a guy are you, by the way?
I am 15.
Okay. I had a feeling you were a younger guy. Listen, you are asking really high level questions here. Okay. I think you have upper management written all over you, as we like to say in the United States.
Thank you so much.
Here's the bottom line. I don't have any secret algorithm or anything about what I'm going to cover. I get to cover 8 stories a day, more or less. And basically what I think about is, what do I feel like talking about today? Where do I have something to add on a story? What might my audience be interested in hearing about? And is it time sensitive and newsworthy? And if so, I just kind of say, here's the 8 things I want to talk about today. I have all these different possibilities and I'm looking at, you know, I have a list of journalists I follow on Twitter and I'm all sorts of newsletters. And it's basically just, what do I want to share with my audience today? That's really it. The reason for me talking about January 6th significantly, because you mentioned that, is the right is trying to rewrite history on what happened there. I think it's an incredibly important sort of before and after event that has kind of changed the direction of what we thought the right was willing to do, or maybe thought they were not willing to do. And I want to do everything I can to remind people that really wasn't normal. we still haven't gotten a full understanding of everything that happened on that day. So that's why, like, in the last 10 days or so, I've been talking about it a lot to answer that specifically.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. And then this one's just a little more of a fun one. But sure. Like, I was wondering, like, what do you think about Canada? Have you been up here? If so, like, what places do you visit?
I love Canada. I have to say, the overwhelming majority of my experience is in Montreal. I've been to Montreal probably 20 times in my life. I grew up going there, and I've been so many times. I love it. I've been to Toronto. It had less charm, but a beautifully organized, kind of less European city, if that makes sense. You know, it's a different story. I've also been to Ottawa once. I don't want to insult Ottawa, but I remember very little about it. It did not inspire me in any real way. And I've never been to Quebec City, but I would like to go as soon as it's reasonable and safe. But I love Canada, and in particular, you know, I love France, and so going to Quebec, I just enjoy it significantly.
I'm sure. I went for the first time this summer just to move my brother into college, and that was really nice.
Oh, okay. What, McGill?
McGill, yeah.
McGill's great. That's fantastic. Well, listen, is the correct pronunciation Vedant?
It's Vedant.
Vedant. And what are the origins of that name?
So it means eternal knowledge in Sanskrit. So my family's originally from Tamil Nadu, which is the southernmost province of India.
Amazing. Amazing. Well, listen, I appreciate the call, my friend.
Thank you so much. Have a great rest of your day.
All right, you too. Wow, what a polite young man, folks. What a polite young man. That is really something else. Okay. Let's try Eric from Cancun. Now, Eric, Happy New Year. I want you to get right into your question, because you know we've struggled with that in the past, my friend. Go right into it. What's your question today?
Hi, David. I will read you something I wrote in Reddit. It says, I know if Republicans can be trusted in the part of maturity. If often than not, they didn't use cartoons as real-world examples. Also picking fights with cartoon characters, that might be because Republicans can either be envious or intimidated at Sesame Street and have higher moral levels than them. Let's not forget that Marjorie Taylor Greene went to portray the Green New Deal as a Scooby-Doo monster, and when Fred was unmasking the monster, the culprit was communist, and the incident of Attack on Titan, do you remember?
Wow, Eric, I have no idea what you're talking about. Did you just read something, or is that something you wrote?
It's something I wrote in your Discord. It's about Republicans wanting to use cartoons as real examples for politics. You remember when Marjorie Taylor Greene went to portray the Green New Deal as a Scooby-Doo monster?
I don't remember that, no.
And they were using memes in the Senate floor.
I remember memes on the Senate floor. Yes, that I remember, yeah.
So on that... And they were picking fights with Dr. Seuss and Sesame Street.
Yes, I remember that.
And I don't think they would be mature enough to focus in real politics if they're using cartoons as real world examples. I mean, that would be the job of politicians and actual cartoonists, and not those whom we trust with the laws.
That's an incredibly astute observation, Eric. Eric, how is the weather in Cancun?
Now it's sunny. It's a bit cold, but I like it in winter. And also, who do you think they would go after next? Like Disney or Cartoon Network, because he belonged to Ted Turner and he made Captain Planet or My Little Pony?
I'm not sure, Eric. Eric from Cancun, always unblemished. Every phone call is absolutely perfect. I really appreciate hearing from you. Wow, that is really, really something else. Let's go next to Roland from Vienna. Is that Vienna, Austria?
That it is, David. Can you hear me?
I can hear you fine.
Perfect. Yes. I agree with the previous caller. I don't think it's because they that's the only way they can formulate their thoughts. But the Republicans, the right wing in general, as we have over here, they speak the language of the Internet much better, and they know it. They know to use it to fool their listeners better than the left does. No,
I think you're right.
Listen, I called in once before and I dropped an F-bomb. I want to excuse myself for that because you asked me the question about whether I like cappuccinos. and I quoted Jimmy from Philly. It said, F your cappuccino.
Right.
So, which brings me to my first point. I want to congratulate for you for a piece you brought out in the summer with Dr. and I'm blanking on his name, where you talked with the doctor and with Jimmy from Philly.
Oh, Dr. Philly. K, and Dr. Alok Kanoja.
That man is a hero. I listened to some of the other stuff he does with these kids online. This
yeah.
is great. And this is very revealing.
Mm-hmm.
Very revealing about the motivation for where Jimmy comes from.
Yeah.
So that's it. One point, I want to make 2 points. The first one being how Putin seems to be, we know Trump loves him. We know Fox News sides with him.
Yes.
Are these guys aware that whenever there's a mass shooting in Russia, there's an assault rifle ban?
They probably are not aware of that, no.
They should be. Putin is one of the toughest guys on gun control because he knows the only way to control the population is when they don't have one, which they always say, no? So it's really ridiculous to see how they're falling in love with him when in reality he's pushing a lot of things that they're not comfortable with.
Well, it's ridiculous for a lot of reasons, and you've just added yeah. one more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I see a lot of people asking you to go back on Joe Rogan and to tell him what's up. And I think from a general perspective, I fully agree with that. I've stopped listening, to be honest. I was never a big fan anyway. I'm into stand-up comedy, so that was a good way to get the news of the day in that field. But he's hence a persona non grata in my podcast feed.
Wow.
And specifically, because this is something that he always pushes. So I'm from Austria. I'm smack in the middle of Europe. We have socialized healthcare. All the
yes.
countries around us do. We're quite happy with it. And I always hear from a lot of conservatives, Republicans, and all the MMA guys on Joe Rogan, everyone's like, oh, if you're in Europe and you break your leg, you need to wait months to get it fixed. Well, yes, if you want to get it fixed, socialized healthcare that pays for itself, then you may be on a waiting spot. That's true. I won't
but
lie.
But I'm guessing you're not going to need to wait months to be stabilized from a broken leg, right? That
no,
seems crazy.
No. Also, you know, we do have a free market healthcare system as well,
right?
In parallel. So nobody is stopping you from dishing out the money out of your own pocket.
Yeah.
You can even get private health insurance. You can get to private hospitals. You can get hospital rooms that are like hotels if you want to pay for it.
Yes.
And that's the big discrepancy. If you want to pay for it, you can have everything. But if you want to have it socialized, if you want to have it free, look, if you can't afford it, would you rather wait for it a month to get the hip replacement, or would you rather not get it, you know?
Of course. Of course.
And I can really feel myself working up. Like I'm getting a sweat.
Yeah, Roland,
on.
You're getting all worked up. You need to go and have a cappuccino.
Not at this time of day, but I'll have a nice smooth otherwise relaxing thing, and that should be nice also.
All right, good. Roland from Vienna, you've really said it all today.
Thanks, David.
All right, there it is. Roland from Vienna. Wow. What a perfect way to cap off phone calls this week. I am sorry I can't ever get to everyone, but I will try again when I see you back here next week. All right, everybody, it's time for the most awaited and sometimes most dreaded moment of the week. It's time for the mailbag. Email us info@davidpakman.com. Spammers and people who abuse the email just get auto-filtered into the trash. It's a sad thing, but it does happen. Some people email us every day, multiple times a day. Don't do it. Nobody's going to read it. It'll just get you banned. Let's just jump right in, though, because there are messages that I would not describe as being messages of peace and love. User NoBS wrote in and said, why don't you go back to Argentina and complain about your own country and start a show to divide it? You're a weak, pathetic beta male who sold his soul and show for a leftist organization for money. You're an perfect example. That's right. You're an perfect example of everything that is wrong with the world today. Satan is your daddy. I take issue with the fact that we sold the show for a leftist organization or to a leftist organization for money. Many have claimed we are Soros funded. It's thinly veiled anti-Semitism, guys. People claim we're funded by the DNC. I'm not even a Democrat. DNC has never given us anything. Just for once, putting the xenophobia of go back to Argentina aside for a moment, just for once, I would love to see a single one of these claims backed up with even a scintilla of data. I'm ready to hear it if you've got it to present. Next one. This is a bonus from Facebook. I love this. This one actually has a big backstory. Someone wrote to me and said, caught your show today, and it's all entirely opinion, not news. Just FYI. Now, a lot of people write this because they have such lack of media literacy that they seem to think, I believe I do a news show. Now, as all of you know, if you've been listening to the show or watching it for any period of time, you know that I accurately characterize this program as an opinion show. This is an opinion show. And if any of you have seen my sort of knowledge pyramid, where if we want to be informed about the world, shows like mine should be equivalent to the junk food. They're more entertainment that hopefully gives you ideas, informs you, gets you thinking. We need to have at the bottom of our pyramid. It's funny, you know, it's sort of the opposite of like religious doctrine, where it's like, we have the answers. It's the opposite of Trump saying, I alone can fix it. My view is we should all have as a baseline epistemology, critical thinking, media literacy, and philosophy. That's our baseline. That then allows us to go and read and learn about history and political science. We take our knowledge of knowledge and we go and we study these areas, history, economics, all these different things. The next quad piece of the pyramid is news reporting, actual reports, Associated Press, etc. And then after all that, once you're well versed in knowing how do I come to know the things I believe, and studying what has happened in the past and economic theory and seeing what's going on, then you throw commentary and opinion programs that you like on top of that. That's always been my position. It's almost like I'm trying to put myself out of business. But in any case, it's funny when someone writes in and goes, your program is not news, it's opinion. I thought you should know that. Oh, believe me, I know. The fact that so many people don't know is the problem we have in this country. Next email is from Don. Don wrote in about COVID deaths. Don said, dear David, please refrain from your weekly reports on notable unvaccinated people dying from COVID. Any fool can point out that many fully vaccinated people also have died from COVID, and your one-sided exuberance makes you appear petty and thoughtless. I have never been exuberant about unvaccinated people dying from COVID. Bring that to some other show, Don, because that's a garbage allegation. In every segment, I say, for me, these aren't funny segments. These are not, I don't, this isn't good. So tell it to someone else. Goes on to say, you may not care, and perhaps you receive all critique as being some political assault, but you really should take a moment and think about how your well-earned reputation as a reasonable commenter can become sullied. Yours truly, Don. Well, Don, if you were making a criticism that was connected to the facts that I'm exuberant about these people dying, that would be one thing. As I've said before, yes, vaccinated people sometimes die. Your likelihood of dying if you are fully vaccinated is orders of magnitude lower than if you are not. And the reason that we point out these stories is the defiance with which some of these people say, I don't need to worry, only exists among the anti-vax. The people who go and get vaccinated recognize, even if I'm not likely to get very sick, I want the protection. Why did I go and get my three doses? Because I know I'm not likely to get very sick, but why chance it? I wear my seatbelt. I use winter tires. I would take the suit of armor if I walked through a forest with arrows flying. And so the point here is the defiance with which, to the very end, they continue to spread anti-vax and then they die and they are unvaccinated. I completely take issue with the characterization from Don. Todd wrote in about last week we looked at this segment where an anti-vax right winger model actress type person said that when she goes near vaccinated people, she has rectal bleeding. And I said that could be very serious. Todd wrote in and said, Pacman, I've researched the strange anal bleeding the poor woman is experiencing when around vaccinated people. My research concludes it's a new form of stigmata. If you air this on your show, please don't play pizzas here, or we have Kentucky Fried Chicken in the background. I don't know. I don't even know what that means. But yeah, if I Googled stigmata, I didn't know what it was. Apparently, it's various sores and bleeding considered to be associated with some kind of religious belief. It's some kind of punishment. Some stigmata is like if for sinning or something, or Satan, someone does it. Anyway, it's yeah. Given that many of these people are Christians, you would think maybe they would chalk it up to stigmata. Got another message. Alexa has decided it doesn't like David Pacman. Greetings. For the last few days, asking Alexa to play the David Pacman show, the latest episode, brings up techno music. I listened to it for a couple minutes yesterday to make sure you hadn't changed your opening music. Unless you are opening with an extended cut, I think the Alexa programming has gotten screwed up. I don't use / have Alexa. If anybody in the audience can replicate this, if you can get a video of asking Alexa to play the latest episode and it playing techno, please record it and send it to info@davidpacman.com. We would really like to see that. That sounds absolutely hilarious. Devin wrote in. Now, by the way, for all the criticisms of David, you're an opinion show. You're not a news show. I always want to issue corrections when they are warranted. Devin corrected me about PCR tests. Let's look at what Devin said. Hello, David, sir. I was watching one of your recent videos on YouTube where you were discussing PCR tests for COVID, and you mentioned that the PCR tests detect viral proteins. I did say that. Devin writes, this is technically incorrect. COVID PCR tests detect the presence of viral RNA. I know you pride yourself on disseminating correct information. I'd figured you'd want to know. You were right, Devin. I did want to know. Love the show. Keep up the good work. Thank you. Thank you. COVID PCR detects the presence of viral RNA. I stand corrected, and I bow at the altar of the audience and apologize. The rest of the analysis was correct in terms of the meaning, the diagnostic value of a PCR test, which has become, unfortunately, the subject of yet more conspiracy theories. Lastly, Ryan wrote in and says, Sir David, David, sir, have been a member almost as long as I've been listening, almost a year now. Greatly appreciate your calm and honest delivery of the daily topics. Keep doing what you do. We all appreciate it. Not all. You should see my inbox, but I appreciate the sentiment. Over the long weekend, I was listening to some of your old interviews. While I appreciate the productive, sane interviews, I've got to say, the ones with, quote, religious people are probably the most entertaining. For example, the David Manning interview is just a total gem. Absolutely hilarious. I suggest the listeners check it out as well. Thanks for your work. Happy New Year, Ryan. Thank you, Ryan. Yeah, we keep sort of going back and forth about the value of doing the wacky interviews. A few months ago, we did one with Amanda Mackey, and she was pretty cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. It does very well. But the reason I've gotten away from it is partially it's less entertaining for me. Like, yes, these people are bonkers. They're ignorant. I get it. But they're so predictable that I've been more going in the direction of talking to journalists, writers, investigators, doctors, etc. And number two, I don't know. I know some people in the audience like it, some don't. So I'm, as I've said before, we'll continue to sprinkle in the interviews with the wacky people. But I've explained a little bit of why I've sort of gotten away from it over the last few years. If you have a question for me, a comment, a thought, whatever, you can write in to info@davidpacman.com. Remember that if you want to get more show every day, you should sign up for a membership at joinpacman.com. Producer Pat is back from his vacation. He will be back on the Friday bonus show. As your regularly scheduled programming has led you to expect, we will...
DJ Heim from Forest, and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
dear Holocaust. It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Now and forever.
Hey there, folks. Glad you could join me for all the best, the smoothest of the smooth, the cool and gentle sounds of what we call jazz. Tired of the fluffy stuff? At WRCT Pittsburgh, jazz is a one-song.
Yo, what's up? How y'all doing out there in Technoland? RCT Techno DJs in the house. Oh yeah, bringing you the only fat beats in Pittsburgh. Right here on WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM.
Would you like to take the sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to www.wrct.org and click on our live MP3 broadcast. Now you can go out of town without any feelings of loss or regret for leaving us behind, because we're just a mouse click away. WRCT, live on the internet. Because why should Pittsburgh have all the fun?
Hey there, folks. Glad you could join me for all the best, the smoothest of the smooth, the cool and gentle sounds of what we call, jazz.
Tired of the fluffy stuff? At WRCT Pittsburgh, jazz is a one-song.
Yo, what's up? How y'all doing out there in Technoland? RCT Techno DJs in the house. Oh yeah, bringing you the only fat beats in Pittsburgh. Right here on WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM.
USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
Hello, my fellow Americans. I would just like to say now, as an expert on the subject, that WRCT Pittsburgh does not blow. Thank you.
DJ Heim from Forest, and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
This is Depose from The Faint. Do you think I'm hot? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
WRCT. Insane. From Way Out.
Nuclear nuclear holocaust. It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced...
Hey there, folks. Glad you could join me for all the best, the smoothest of the smooth, the cool and gentle sounds of what we call, jazz. Tired of the fluffy stuff? At WRCT Pittsburgh, jazz is a one-syllable word.
This is Democracy Now!
I knew that I could never again raise my voice against the violence of the oppressed in the ghettos without having first spoken clearly to the greatest purveyor of violence in the world today, my own government.
Today, a Democracy Now! Special, Dr. Martin Luther King in his own words. We hear excerpts of two historic speeches, Beyond Vietnam and I've Been to the Mountaintop, from the night before he was assassinated in 1968.
We've got some difficult days ahead, but it really doesn't matter with me now, because I've been to the mountaintop. A long life, longevity has its place. But I'm not concerned about that now. I just want to do God's will. And He's allowed me to go up to the mountain. And I've looked over and I've seen the promised land.
Dr. Martin Luther King for the Hour, coming up. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Today is a federal holiday that honors Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. He was born January 15, 1929. He was assassinated April 4, 1968, at the Lorraine Motel in Memphis, Tennessee. He was just 39 years old. While Dr. King is primarily remembered as a civil rights leader, he also championed the cause of the poor, organizing the Poor People's Campaign to address issues of economic justice. And Dr. King was a fierce critic of U.S. foreign policy and the Vietnam War. Beyond Vietnam was the speech he delivered at New York's Riverside Church on April 4, 1967, a year to the day before he was assassinated. In it, Dr. King called the United States the greatest purveyor of violence in the world today. Life magazine called the speech demagogic slander that sounded like a script for Radio Hanoi. The Washington Post said King, quote, diminished his usefulness to his cause, his country, his people, unquote. Well, today we let you decide. We play an excerpt of Dr. King's speech, Beyond Vietnam.
After 1954, they watched us conspire with Diem to prevent elections which could have surely brought Ho Chi Minh to power over a united Vietnam. And they realized they had been betrayed again. When we ask why they do not leap to negotiate, these things must be remembered. Also, it must be clear that the leaders of Hanoi considered the presence of American troops in support of the Diem regime to have been the initial military breach of the Geneva Agreements concerning foreign troops. And they remind us that they did not begin to send troops in large numbers and even supplies into the South until American forces had moved into the tens of thousands. Hanoi remembers how our leaders refused to tell us the truth about the earlier North Vietnamese overtures for peace, how the president claimed that none existed when they had clearly been made.